This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, the story of Metro Now, designed to make waiting for the bus more convenient. First up, service learning programs let students engage in hands-on projects that have a positive impact on the community, as well as a number of benefits for the students themselves. Joining us to discuss service learning are Boone County Schools Chief Administrative Officer and Deputy Superintendent Dr. Karen Chesser, Northern Kentucky University Assistant Professor of Social Work and Faculty Coordinator for the Mayerson Student Philanthropy Project, Dr. Jessica Averett Taylor, and Thomas More College Associate Adjunct Professor and Director of the Thomas More Success Center, Dr. John Ernst. If you'd like to join us, the phone number to call, 513-419-7100. You can also email your questions to talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Karen, John, and Jessica, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
John, tell us, what is the definition of service learning? What is that exactly?
So service learning is an academic course in which you're balancing learning academic content with providing service to the community.
Okay, give me an example.
So an example is at Thomas More, we have a taxation course, and students learn about how to perform taxes, how to fill out the forms, how to learn about the principles of taxation, and then they can choose to practice that and by going out in the community and helping people prepare their tax forms at tax time.
Jessica, did you want to add into that definition?
I would like to, yes. So what I would like to add is I think faculty members can be so creative with how they do this service learning so that each faculty member can take this and really format it to best fit their courses. What we're doing is connecting the ivory tower to our actual communities through service learning projects. And then at the end of each class, ideally, there should be some reflection. So how did this connect to your course for you personally as a student?
And Karen, in your case, John and Jessica are working with college-age students, but in your case, you're working with kids who are kindergarten through 12th grade, right?
Absolutely, yes. So all of our students in Boone County, 21,000 students, we hope that our goal is for them to have at least one service learning experience a semester, all through their high school, elementary, middle school, preschool careers. So those projects wouldn't just be tied to one course, but might actually be interdisciplinary and tie in different content areas towards one sort of student-driven goal that's of service to the community.
And, you know, this is such an important thing that the Greater Cincinnati Learning Network was created. Karen, can you tell us some more about that?
Yeah, so I've been very fortunate to be on the network for about 3 years now. It was started by Rick Hulefeld of Children, Inc., sort of brought some like-minded folks together and said, you know, how can we create some momentum around service learning? Lots of great things happening in pockets around the region, but we needed to come together to spur on service learning so that every student could participate from, you know, the youngest children all the way up through post-secondary.
So
the Service Learning Network is made up of large organization members such as the United Way, Mayerson Foundation, Children, Inc., as well as all the post-secondary institutions and many school districts, all working together to create a plan of action and actually make that happen.
Do you know how many school districts?
We've actually done some work.
How many school districts, Karen?
Well, in the executive committee, there are, I know, CPS and Boone County Schools, but it reaches far beyond that. There is a K-12 committee and also a post-secondary committee, and I think all of the regional post-secondary institutions are on the post-secondary. And as far as the ones in the K-12 network, I know there are at least 10 to 12 school districts in the region on that.
Mm-hmm. Talk about how students benefit from this kind of. Is this the same thing as experiential learning, Karen?
Yes and no. I mean, experiential learning, you know, can be used sometimes to talk about just anything that provides a hands-on experience for students. And some examples of experiential learning and expeditionary learning and using manipulatives and that sort of thing, we always want students to have. But service learning is different in that the goal of the project, the goal of the hands-on learning is to make an impact in the community. Students are already making a difference. We just learned this from a speaker the network brought in just a couple of weeks ago. Just by living, you're making a difference. But how can you make a powerful impact, not only on your community, but on your own learning and on your own future? So it's very content-driven, but also everything the student does is always thinking, how can I solve this real community issue?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about making an impact in the community. So, for example, at Thomas More, we have a border studies program where students learn sociology principles in the classroom, and then they go down to the border in Texas with Mexico, and they apply those principles and learn from people who are living on the border and understanding the sociology from a first-person perspective. So they're getting themselves out of the classroom, and so there's both this learning, and they also provide services while they're down there, and so there's this great impact on the community as well.
Yes, and we have a similar effort at NKU with the Project Hope or 505 initiative, which focuses on Census Tract 505 in the Newport neighborhood of Northern Kentucky. So we have systematically focused some of our community engagement efforts in that area, and it has resulted in projects that range from public history and art history to neighborhood tours, and there is now a thriving neighborhood community organization that meets on a regular basis, and we've pulled in other universities and local schools as well on that effort.
Why that particular census tract?
That's a really good question. That decision was made by a consortium of organizations and universities. There was a study done looking at, in this area, if we focused our efforts, I think that we could potentially make so much more of an impact rather than one semester we're in this neighborhood and then another semester we're in another neighborhood. And so we all decided to put at least some of our focus onto this neighborhood based on some demographic indicators. So the poverty levels are a little bit higher than we would like to see and the educational levels a little bit lower, but also because the neighborhood has some immense strengths. There's the community organization, there are neighborhood cleanup programs, and the Brighton Center is there with their outreach efforts as well. So there's a lot of potential in that particular neighborhood.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter as we talk about service learning. And Karen, you're talking about starting with kindergarten age kids.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of things can you do with them to start teaching them about this concept?
Great question. I mean, one of the things that we've realized is with our kindergarten students or early elementary is that the community can be the area outside of the school, but many times the community is within the school. And so we have some young children, kindergarten through third grade, who actually are learning how to code using Scratch, you know, the MIT program, in order to help other children in the school learn math facts. So, for example, they decided that their project they were working on that could be of service to their community and their school was to solve this real issue that other students were having. And so it's really cool to see, you know, very young children using their computers to develop actual learning games using code, all because they want to be able to teach other children. So that was just an example of how you know, even young children can do community projects. One of the things that you hear quite a bit are community service projects, you know, food drives mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. But what is kind of kick that up a notch and say, why is it that we're doing food drives? What are the community issues that cause that are contributing to that? And so instead, our kindergarten, first, second, third grade students are learning about hunger and you know, how that happens and what they can do to not only provide food on a limited basis, but how can they help change the course of people's lives? And
I think we're having some problems with Karen on the phone line there. So John and Jessica, you know, Karen's talking about it. It sounds like it's a progressive kind of thing. You start these kids off with certain concepts and you keep building year after year after year so that by the time they reach college, they're used to this kind of thing. Are you seeing more and more kids coming in who are expecting you to have a service learning program at the schools?
Absolutely, yes. And they seek it out. So the students want to know what classes are engaged, how can they find that out through the course catalog, and then they are more likely to sign up for those classes. We also do long-term assessment, and we find that students who participate in these sorts of classes are more likely to stay with us through their college career, and then they are more likely to give back after graduation as well.
Yeah, I think there's a big developmental progression, and the research is very clear that students who participate in service learning in high school do more service learning in college, and students who do more service learning in college are more likely to be involved in the community in a variety of civic ways once they've left, especially in that first 10 years after college.
Karen, do the Boone County schools require a certain number of service hours each year?
Well, currently our high schools require a certain number of community service hours, but we're sort of changing that paradigm to make it service learning. We just launched a 5-year strategic plan, and one of the focus areas of our strategic plan is that all students have at least one service learning experience each semester. We've been told that we may be one of the only school districts in the country that has service learning as a focus of our plan. We have one of the skills that we want all of our students to build is compassion. And in order to do that, we feel like there's no better way than service learning. So a requirement starting actually, our goal is that in 5 years, every single student will have at least one service learning experience a semester. And we're well on our way to making that happen.
And I think one of the great things about that program that you mentioned is this reflection part of it. It's easy to go out in the community and come away with stereotypes and coming away with misunderstandings. And so that reflection component that Jessica mentioned early is so important, as well as preparing students for going out into the community so that it's a learning experience rather than a reinforcing of negative stereotypes experience.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very easy for our students. We do have kind of a bubble in some ways on our college campuses, and this is a way to reconnect with our local communities. And that reflection piece, we can tell them all day how it connects, but having students reflect on it and verbalize those connections on their own is a much more powerful experience, I think.
So Karen says building compassion, building empathy, this is good for helping students become more empathetic?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we found is when we ask students what are their, you know, favorite things about school, what do they wish they did more of, and they start to talk about giving back, that it's through these service learning experiences that they realize how great that feels and that they actually can make an impact and they just want to do more of it. So we found when we've done some research and surveys and some, forums with students before and after projects, that they definitely have more mindfulness of their strengths as givers and doing more of the community and becoming more productive citizens.
We will continue our conversation about service learning, and you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and we're talking about service learning with Boone County Schools Chief Administrative Officer and Deputy Superintendent, Dr. Karen Chesser, Northern Kentucky University Assistant Professor of Social Work and Faculty Coordinator for the Mayerson Student Philanthropy Project, Dr. Jessica Averett-Taylor, and Thomas More College Associate, Adjunct Professor, and Director of the Thomas More Success Center, Dr. John Ernst. And if you'd like to join us in the conversation, 513-419-7100 is the phone number to call. You can also email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Karen, do you find service learning helps the kids academically as well?
Oh, absolutely, and that has to be a key component of this, because as you know, we only have so many hours in a day, and we're already, you know, we stretch to make sure that our students have the skills that they need for the workplace, for their future workplace. And so we have to make sure that anything we do is also going to have a huge component on their, you know, academic skills. And so we are finding that when students are involved in these kinds of projects, service learning projects, not only are they more engaged, but they retain much more of what they've learned because they've had the opportunity to think critically about it. They've had the opportunity to apply those skills, and they've had an opportunity to dig really deep into that learning. So we are finding that it impacts them academically, which is one reason we wanted to make sure that it was a part of our strategic plan.
John, same thing at the college level?
So the college level, Right. Service learning is a part of academic learning, so it provides this link between understanding concepts that you might learn in the classroom with concrete experiences outside of the classroom. So that's one of the reasons why we made it experiential learning, which is a slightly broader construct, but we have experiential learning as a requirement for all students at Thomas More, and many of them do use service learning as a way to fulfill that credit. And so we've had service learning for a long time at Thomas More, but it's only been in the last 2 years that we've made it a requirement for all students.
Now, when did the service learning program get underway at Thomas More?
So service learning's been around for a while. I've only been involved for the last 2 years, so I'm not the best historian of service learning at Thomas More. But we've had programs in taxation for at least 10 years. We've had programs in sociology for at least 10 years. So we've had various pieces of service learning for at least 10 years.
Are there service Greek organizations at NKU or Thomas More that you work with?
Yes, absolutely. We have a Greek organization specifically dedicated to service, and they are fantastic, incredibly involved students. They're all over campus, and they come to us and ask what they can do to support our initiatives. So we've been incredibly lucky with that at NKU.
Sure.
One thing that I wanted to add, too, about extending learning or how does this build academic skills, I mean, one of the things that we found is that students are involved in service learning projects, such as the Thirsty Project that's happening at Long Branch Elementary School right now, the learning does not stop at 4 o'clock. These kids want to stay after school. They are working on the weekend. They're talking to their families about it. And so that's one of the things that we said that typically doesn't happen if you're just teaching science in a usual way or math. So that's another way that it's impacting academics.
Yes, and our students, they feel a connection to the communities and the community agencies. So the faculty members are marvelously creative, and service learning, it sounds like a natural fit for the social sciences, but also the hard sciences have been wonderful, and we've had business and law, and it's really just across campus. But what strikes home, I think, in part, is the commitment and dedication of the students once they have been exposed to service learning. So students do things. They organize donation drives and fundraisers. I had students bring a $1,000 check to an agency on their own after the semester had already concluded. So their work is just, it's inspiring. It's beautiful to witness.
Jessica, yeah. Tell us some more about the Mayerson Student Philanthropy Project at NKU. That's what, it reached 15 years, didn't it?
We did, yes. We hit the 15-year mark, and this semester we actually donated over $1 million in total through both direct and indirect funding with the Mayerson Student Philanthropy Project. So it was
$1 million in one semester?
No, $1 million overall.
Okay, you just reached it.
But a really big deal for us, and so we had a big celebration for that. We are in about 8 to 12 classes each semester at NKU, and the way that it works is the faculty members apply and receive a small grant through our Scripps Howard Center and the Mayerson Foundation on campus. It's typically $2,000, and the students then spend the semester exploring community needs and resources, and they, at the end of the semester, award that money to a local community agency typically.
Now, you mentioned direct and indirect. What does that mean? Direct, I guess, would be you give them the cash directly,
yes.
And then indirect means?
Well, mostly we are funded through the Mayerson Foundation, but we've also been lucky enough to collaborate with other organizations as well, including City, Skyward, ArtsWave, and then Toyota. Toyota gives money away already, but they've been nice enough to invite our students to collaborate with them on giving that money away.
So they're helping make the decision about,
yes,
who gets
so
the money.
NKU undergraduates are big players in this. Yes.
John, tell us some more about how the Thomas More program works.
So one thing I wanted to build on was this idea that service learning can be beyond the social sciences. So, for example, we have a faculty member in accounting who does a service learning class on teaching students how to do management for nonprofit agencies. So the students go out and they partner with nonprofit agencies and they work in them. So it's a chance to do service learning outside in a business environment as opposed to something like
That's okay, but you're saying that this gives these kids a broad perspective, doesn't it? I mean, they're getting to see things that they wouldn't get to see in just a classroom setting, in your normal academic setting.
Right, they can see things in the nonprofit agency, and they're learning, they're seeing the concepts that they're learning in the classroom in practice. They can make these connections between what's going on in the classroom with real-world practice. And I think that's the big benefit for service learning from the learning point of service learning, which is concrete experience with the abstract concepts that you're learning in the classroom.
Do you find it makes the students more philanthropic, more in tune with philanthropic concerns?
So students, I would say I can answer from the point of view of just civic engagement. So students who are involved in service learning have greater civic engagement than those who are not involved in service learning.
And we do collect data on that. And long term, our students are more committed to philanthropy, having participated in a Mayerson class at NKU. So we do have numbers to back that up, that after graduation, even they are still more committed to philanthropy on a broader scale.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And let's speak with Kelly in Redding. Kelly, it says you're the executive director of Magnified Giving. Tell us about that.
Well, I just would like to congratulate everybody for all the work you're doing in the community. We're all in this together. And Magnified Giving supports everything that is happening in service learning. We actually work with the service learning high schools and go a little deeper and take the action steps. So we provide the financial support to allow the teachers and the students to make the action actually happen with all of their research. They're compassionate. Their passion is all on fire. They want to make change, and we grant the money that they can then in turn grant to a charity of their choice after they've done extensive research and want to make sure that the organization's doing the best that it can do with their money. So I just wanted to call in and say congratulations to everybody. It's a wonderful conversation. I love that this is happening on the air and that everybody's talking about it. We're all making our community stronger with the next generation in mind.
Thank you, Kelly.
Actually, it is such a small world. So we worked with Magnified Giving with the Mayerson Project a little bit this semester, and Roger Grimes came to our celebration just a little while ago, Kelly.
Exactly. I was there as well.
Oh.
That was lovely.
It is a small world. Okay.
It is indeed. Thanks, Kelly. We appreciate the call. Let's talk with Winnie in Delhi. Hi, Winnie. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. I just called because I'm a community service person with Mount St. Joseph University, and I guess I should say a community partner. And the students in their service learning program, some of them come to where I am to do service, and quite frankly, they are among the most wonderful people I've ever met, and they're always willing to not only do, but also to learn while they're doing. And I think that's an important part of our helping them to move forward in their lives.
Okay, thank you, Winnie. We appreciate the call.
Sure.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Obviously, there's a lot of benefits the students can accrue from doing this. What kind of impact does this have on the community at large, though?
Well, I can answer that about one of our probably, awarded community service project, or service learning project we've had in Northern Kentucky. I don't know if you've heard about the Northern Kentucky Makerspace. But that started out with a group of 13 students, all ages 11 to 14, who saw a great need in the community and thought there was no place to really tinker, create, innovate, and not a cool place for robotics and 3D printing. So they came up with the idea. They pitched it to several community leaders. Leadership Northern Kentucky partnered with them and raised $125,000. The kids designed the building, created the plans, did all the budgeting, and it actually opened in April, and it's open. Even though it's in Boone County Schools and started with a group of Boone County School students, it's open to every student in Northern Kentucky. There's a full-time staff person there. There are field trips, workshops, after-school activities, the summer camps, and that all started with this group of students who continue to do workshops at the Makerspace.
Jessica, what about the program at NKU? What kind of impact do you think that's had, Mayerson's had?
Sure. Well, we have developed long-term partnerships with several of our local community agencies. So one that comes almost immediately to mind is Hosea House here in the Northern Kentucky area. And they wanted money to develop a community garden in a an empty lot that was beside the building and was kind of a blight on the neighborhood. And so over the course of several semesters, through the Mayerson Student Philanthropy Project and service learning at NKU, we were able to fund and start working on that community garden. And the soil initially was not the best soil in the world, so it did take some initiative from our students and from volunteers as well. But now it is a thriving community space in that area, and the vegetables that are grown there directly contribute to Hosea House and the programming already going on. So one small example, but that's a very common thing. We do see the same agencies again and again.
John, what about at Thomas More? What kind of impact do you think you've had on the community with the service learning program there?
So what I like about the service learning program at Thomas More is it's both local and global community. So we do projects in Jamaica, we do projects in Texas, and we do projects in Northern Kentucky. So we see impacts in communities, and it helps students, I think, see connections between local community and more global community.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us, and let's talk with Mary Kay. Hi, Mary Kay.
Good afternoon.
And go right ahead.
Great. First, congratulations, Jessica. It's a huge, huge contribution that Northern Kentucky University has made over the last 15 years. So congratulations to Northern and the Mayerson Philanthropy Program.
As
a parent of
you.
That went through it, I know it really had a deep impact upon him.
And it was your son who went through this?
Yes, several years ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I also wanted to send thanks to all of you for bringing this forward, you know, coming as a community partner in service learning. I think you all have made such great points. Something Karen Chesser pointed out earlier was the value of the of social and emotional development. We often think about academic success, but what you point out and what service learning truly, truly offers is a depth of social and emotional growth and building of empathy in our community. So I thank you all for appearing today and for being great partners in the area.
And thank you, Mary Kay, for the phone call. Let's talk with Alan in Middletown. Hi, Alan.
Yes, hello.
You can go right ahead. You're on.
Okay, thank you. I'm a professor at Miami University in the Middletown campus. I'm in the biology department, but I teach in integrated studies. And our 301 seminar that's part of the requirements for our integrated studies majors has a very large service learning component in it. I've been doing this for almost 10 years now, and I have found that a lot of our students find employment opportunities and even career opportunities after going through their service learning projects.
That is such a good point. Yes, many of our students go on to complete internships with their service learning agencies, which can then potentially turn into positions as well.
Yes, for a lot of our students, I would say easily 10 to 15% of their service learning project experience is a life-changing one. And it really is an important component. Some of them are reluctant at first. Oh, why do I have to do this?
Yes. Sort of.
But once they get into it and they start really interacting with the community members and getting into the project that they're interested in, it transforms them.
And I think one of the great ways it transforms students is for some students it really reinforces what they want to do, and for some students it helps them figure out what they don't want to do. And college is such a great time to figure out what you do and don't want to do, and so it's just totally great to see them come back and say, oh my gosh, that was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I really want to continue that for my career. They're more engaged in their studies. Sometimes they come back and say, I need to switch directions. And then both kinds
That's
of learning
exactly right.
I think
and
really great.
Right. It's good to do that early.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. And one thing we hear from students sometimes as well is that everyone wants experience. So even to get an internship, the agencies already want students to have experience. Well, this is experience. This is professional experience for each of them. So I think it's extremely beneficial in that direction as well.
Alan, thank you for the phone call. And Karen, you wanted to add something to that?
I would just say kind of taking that in a different direction, the whole getting a job. I happened to be able to speak to the vice president of Google Education a few months ago and was talking to him about what are the skills you look for in future employees. And he said, you know, sometimes people might think we're looking for the high GPA or we're looking for the person who was the in charge of the student council or was a valedictorian. He said, but really, we ask our candidates, what do you do on the weekend? We want employees that give back. We want employees who volunteer. We want those, as we've talked about, compassionate people. We know that they are the best employees. And so we think that not only are we, you know, preparing our students academically and with those social emotional skills that Mary Kay was talking about, but we're giving them the skills, the high level skills that they're going to need for the future workplace and what employers want.
Karen, what do you think the future is for service learning? Is this an idea that's just going to keep growing and keep catching on?
Oh, absolutely. There are several others now talking about this, how this is the area that will, you know, draw kids in, that will engage them, that will really, you know, even in our era of, you know, tons of technology everywhere and what seems to be students moving away from socializing and relationship, that this is an area that can really draw them back and help them understand the power of giving, the power of relationship, and the power of connection.
Thank you, everybody, for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Boone County Schools Chief Administrative Officer and Deputy Superintendent Dr. Karen Chesser, Northern Kentucky University Assistant Professor of Social Work and Faculty Coordinator for the Mayerson Student Philanthropy Project, Dr. Jessica Averett Taylor, and Thomas More College Associate Adjunct Professor and Director of the Thomas More Success Center, Dr. John Ernst. Coming up, a new app that will make waiting for the bus a lot easier. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. What if there was a way to make waiting for the bus a lot easier? Metro Now, a People's Liberty grant project, does this by utilizing off-the-shelf hardware and open-source software. And Daniel Schleith joins us along with fellow grantee, attorney, CincinnatiStreetcar.com founder, and Southwest Ohio Regional Transit Authority board member Brad Thomas, and Cincinnati Metro SORTA Public Relations Manager Brandy Jones to talk about Metro Now and the Cincinnati transportation system. Regular Metro riders, let us know your thoughts about local public transportation. Give us a call at 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Daniel, Brad, and Brandy, thank you for being here today. Much appreciated. Brad, can you start off by telling us what Metro Now is exactly?
Metro Now is a way to provide low-cost, real-time arrival signs to places where you might not be able to justify the full cost of a $5,000 piece of hardware that's, you know, outside and weatherproof and indestructible. What we're doing is we're using cheap, off-the-shelf tablets, and we're partnering with local businesses along routes, and we provide these tablets for free, and it shows real-time arrival data for Metro riders.
Now, how many of the tablets are out there at this point?
So far, four, I think.
Yeah, we have four out right now. We have one at Findlay Market, one on Main Street and Over the Rhine, Walnut Hills Redevelopment Foundation, and on Ludlow Avenue in Sitwell's Coffee House.
Daniel, how exactly did you come up with the idea for this?
So actually, Brad gets a lot of credit for the idea. I had been working with the real-time data on other projects as part of my PhD research, and Brad kind of kicked around like, oh, People's Liberty is giving these grants away, and maybe we could sort of use some of that money to have an impact around the city.
Mm-hmm. Brandy, how useful is this going to be for Metro riders?
Metro is thrilled to have programs like Metro Now available to our customers. Earlier this year, our CEO, Dwight Farrell, made a decision to open up our real-time feed available to the public. And he asked for anyone who had any ideas about creating applications or other software services to actually use our streaming feed and create something. And so we were thrilled that several organizations, including two locals such as Metro Now, as well as Bus Detective, which was created by a local software consultancy company called Gaslight, they created Bus Detective, which people can download the app for free on their smartphones or tablets, and it gives them real-time data of when their bus is arriving.
How exactly do you do that? Is it GPS tracking? Is that how this works?
Yeah, right. Each of the buses has a GPS tracker on it, and it gives like a calculated update for when it should arrive at the next stop.
Yeah, opening up the data was a great decision. We've had a lot of private interest and activity, and one of the great things is we have the real time arrival app, which is great if you have a smartphone. What Metro Now is good for is let's say you don't have a smartphone, or let's say you don't ride the bus often, but you start seeing these signs and you see, oh, there's a bus every 10 minutes. It really encourages interest in non-riders and gets them acclimated to the frequency and the places it goes for the system.
You can kind of take a sigh of relief and say, I know the bus will be here in 10 minutes. I'm not have to play a guessing game, right?
Exactly. And it's great for small businesses like Sitwell's Coffee Shop, which has one. Let's say you're waiting for the bus. You see it's coming in 15 minutes. Go in, get a cup of coffee. You got plenty of time. You don't have to worry about missing your bus.
No sweat, right? No rush, no hurry. Just relax and enjoy. Now, where are you going to go next with this? I mean, you got the four setups so far. Where do you think you're going to head next with this?
So what were we talking about? Probably we basically want to have one in every neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, really, we'd like to blanket the entire city. But so next would be kind of we're going to sit down and look at some of the ridership data and kind of just pick the most used stops and try to get tablets as close to those as possible.
Yeah, we want to focus on the heavy ridership. So Price Hill would be a location we're looking for. The Reading Road corridor, the Vine Street corridor, Madison Road perhaps. You know, different places where you have strong metro ridership and transfer points are also good, so you can make sure you reach your connection or you hit your crosstown buses as well.
Do you have plans to expand this in the future so you can track other forms of public transportation with it?
Yeah, I think any public transit in Cincinnati has the real-time data. Like the streetcar would also be available.
Yeah, the GPS system on the streetcar is the same that we use on all of our buses, so it would be compatible for both.
Okay. I know there's one that tracks Red Bike. Any idea if you're going to be doing anything like that?
I've talked to them about their data. It's sort of not the same type of GPS system, but they have like the check-ins and check-out locations, but it's sort of like a different setup.
Have you run into any challenges or kinks trying to get this going?
Not a ton, other than it's just sort of harder than I thought to identify businesses that sort of are really sort of maybe as passionate about it as we are. Like a lot of people kind of, it's like a neat idea. I get a lot of positive feedback, though. I think that most people, it's like a slow process. We have to identify the business and then talk to them and then figure out the install and where it's going to be in their business. So it's like a kind of slow process that happens over time.
If a business wants to be involved in it, how can they do that?
My email is probably the best. D. Schleith, my last name, Schleith@gmail.
Yeah. We'll have links to all that at WVXU.org as well. Brandy, are people responding well to this? Do you find that the people who are using this are saying, this is great. This is what I've been waiting for.
Absolutely. One of the biggest complaints we often hear from our riders is they don't know when their next bus is coming and the uncertainty you feel when you're waiting in the rain or the snow and you don't know if you just missed your bus by a minute or if it's delayed in traffic and it'll be a 10-minute delay. So having a service like Metro Now and Bus Detective and Transit App, which is another app that uses our real-time feed, really makes the experience of riding the bus much more convenient for our 60,000 plus riders a day who are using our service.
And so you've actually got the three apps that you're working with at Metro.
Yes. And in addition to the apps, as Brad mentioned, we know that not everyone has smartphones or tablets. So we have what we call, it's called the real-time info line. So if you're waiting at your bus stop, each bus stop has a unique four-digit code, and you would just simply call Metro's customer service line at 621-4455. And when you select option one, it allows you to enter those four digits and you can find out what time the next bus is coming to that particular stop, when the last bus left from that stop, as well as plan your future trips with scheduled time information. And we also have what we call Bus Tracker. It's a link on our website at go-metro.com, where once you go there, you can, from your desktop, click on the tab, and it'll show you a map of our service area. And once you put in which route you want to track, it'll show you a map of the bus, the bus on the map, and you can follow it in and see if the bus will have any delays.
That gives you real-time info?
Real-time info.
Okay.
So whether it's on your phone, your tablet, and your desktop, on your phone, your home phone, you can call in and find out real-time information.
And we'll continue our conversation about Metro Now, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and we're talking about Metro Now with creators Daniel Schleith, an attorney, CincinnatiStreetCar.com founder, and Southwest Ohio Regional Transit Authority board member Brad Thomas, and Cincinnati Metro Sorta Public Relations Manager Brandy Jones. If you'd like to join us, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And I guess, Daniel, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, like you were telling me, there's a third person who's been involved in this.
Yeah, I should add, Nate Wessel is the third grantee on this project. He's the one who built the real-time app for us. So we miss you, Nate. He's now living in Toronto finishing his PhD.
Okay, so that we have a third person involved, and that's Nate. So thanks for mentioning him. Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation. What about plans to eventually have this as an app for mobile devices? Is it headed that direction maybe?
Well, right now it's a web-based app.
Right.
So if you have any tablet or computer, you can run the Metro Now on any device with an internet connection. So it's great. One thing that we'd like to do in the future is expand, work with Tank, and make it a more regional app, Claremont Transit maybe, and really tie together all the different modes of transportation in our region.
Right. And like I mentioned, we are thrilled to have these individuals in the community who have created these apps and features that really make riding the bus much more convenient for our riders. And we want to encourage anyone else out there who have ideas or tech experience who want to create something, just go to our website at go-metro.com. There's a tab with information about how to tap into our real-time stream, and you can create something. And it's, for example, the company Gaslight, they created that bus detective for their own employees because half of them actually ride Metro to and from work. And once they created it, they thought, wow, this is really great software. Let's open it up to the public. So any ideas are welcome. And Metro will be very grateful for them. And we're just happy to be able to pass it on to our riders.
Any idea how many other cities are using something like this?
So actually, real-time arrival apps are not super uncommon. They would be around a lot of cities, but the actual sort of like tablet display that we've created is the low-cost, put-it-anywhere aspect of it, I think, is relatively unique.
So that's the difference, is that you're using the tablet system. Now, Brandy, how many buses do we have running in the Cincinnati area?
Metro has about 357 buses. So any given day, almost all of those are out in the road any given time.
And how many total routes does Metro have?
I believe we have, they're number 1 through 90, but there is not actually 90 routes. So there's about, 50 to 60 routes. I don't have the exact number on hand at the moment.
And some of those are the express routes, right? They run out to
the
suburbs. Can you track the express routes on this? Is it?
Yeah. They show up on the, if you use the bus, I use the Bus Detective app, like when I'm waiting for the bus and all of anything. So our app is built on the back end that Gaslight built. So anything that is tracked on the Bus Detective app is visible on our tablet app.
513-419-7100 to join us. And if I were new to the Cincinnati area and I didn't have a car, how does our area do with public transportation? Do we stack up pretty well? Is it pretty easy to get around town?
There was a recent report that in terms of efficiency, Sorta is number one in efficiency per dollar per transportation provided among its peer cities. But unfortunately, in terms of job coverage, we lag far behind many of our other peer cities. So SORT is a lean organization. They're doing everything they can with the funds available. But if we're going to create some jobs and really contribute to economic development, we need to expand our system and really connect more people to more jobs.
How much do you think the streetcar is going to help once it gets going, Brad?
Well, I think the streetcar is definitely going to be helpful for supporting the repopulation of downtown and over the Rhine. And that puts people in a great position to be connected to transit. You know, we have a hub and spoke system. But if you live downtown or in over the Rhine, you're in the middle of the hub, so you can go anywhere with public transportation. Another thing I think that's going to be important about the streetcar is it's going to introduce a lot of people to public transportation who might be unfamiliar with taking it. I know a lot of people, when they go to Chicago, will take the L, or when they go to New York, will take the subway, but they rarely get on a bus in Chicago or New York. So same kind of concept. The streetcar, it's easy to understand. The route's very legible. You see where the tracks are going. And I think that'll encourage a lot of people who are coming downtown to go to a Reds game. You park, you save money on parking, you take the streetcar, and you get a really good positive public transportation experience, and maybe you think, oh, I'll ride again in the future.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Faith in Dayton. Hi, Faith.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Great idea, great program, but as you were talking, I'm still sort of confused about how this is working, so I don't know. Is there a brochure out there somewhere that I can pick up? because I'm a person that does better with reading things. The other thing is don't always have access to, you know, the new technologies all of the time. And also, it sounds like it would be a great place, because I visit the museums and things a lot, to have located at some of the museums so that I could just get around Cincinnati better without having to drive and maybe pay for a whole lot of parking and things like that. So okay. I'm going to hang up and listen to what you have to tell me. Bye-bye.
Okay, Faith, we got the three people here who can talk about that. So thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, the museum's definitely a good idea. And that's another thing that benefits from Metro Now is if you're visiting a city, you might not have their app downloaded onto your phone. So if you're just in as a tourist, having these displays up, you don't need to download any software. You don't need to take any additional steps. You can just see where the bus is coming and when you need to go.
Yeah, actually, so Nate did a super good job on the app. The display actually shows sort of like the geometry of the route. So like you see when the bus, you see the number of the bus and when it's arriving, and then you see the actual like route displayed on a map of Cincinnati, like where you can take that bus that's coming. So even if you aren't planning on taking the bus, you can sort of see like where you could take the bus. Right. So like if you drove that day, but you might want to try the bus the next day, like the app is really good at facilitating sort of like a discussion about transit in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. And if you're using any of the apps, Bus Detective or Transit app, once you download them, they are absolutely free and they're pretty easy to use. You can use your GPS to show exactly where you are. And on the map, the app will tell you exactly where or exactly when the next bus is coming to that particular stop. So you can search by street name, you can search by your location. So it's very easy to use.
Let's talk with Jacob in Fort Wright. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, this is Jacob. I just had a comment that I loved riding the bus when I was in college, and I really appreciate it. This app sounds like it's going to be a lot very useful. I was actually theorized about it a bit. But as a professional now, I'm in the manufacturing engineering industry, and it's always hard for me to find bus routes going out to the suburbs rather than coming in for, like, business hours. I'll take my comments off here. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Jacob. Finding that ride out to the suburbs, that's his dilemma.
And that's one thing Metro was really working on doing, is reinventing our service so that it meets the needs of all of our riders in the community. Right now, we are very, very limited in funding, and so that really dictates the amount of service we're able to offer. And so we're working on it.
Yeah, and right now Metro is having a series of meetings through the Metro Futures Task Force, meeting with community stakeholders and citizens all throughout the county, trying to figure out what's best, where do we grow from here, and what do we really want our public transportation system to look like going forward.
Stephen called, he had a technical question. Will Metro now, will that information now be available through Google or other universal platforms?
If you use the Google app, it does have our scheduled transit times. I don't believe it has the real-time information. But if you use Google Maps, you'll get scheduled times.
I don't think it's
real-time.
Yeah.
And this heads next. You're going to keep expanding it outward?
Yeah, absolutely. We're really excited about this. If there's any business owners who would like to have a tablet, we'd like to work with you. Email Daniel. I'm sure the details will be on the website. And we'd really like to get some more placements and really create more ridership and more opportunity.
Yeah. And that's correct. There's a link to that at WVXU.org. And thanks, everybody, for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks for having us.
Metro Now creators Daniel Schleith, an attorney, Cincinnati Streetcar.com founder, and Southwest Ohio Regional Transit Authority board member Brad Thomas, and Cincinnati Metro SORTA Public Relations Manager Brandy Jones. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our program are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. Belinda Kai was the assistant producer. The technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Mark Haney. Here and Now is next on 91.7 WVXU.